I believe that the Mists were searching for someone to become a new host for them. The power needed a consciousness to direct it. In this matter, I am still rather confused. Why would power used to create and destroy need a mind to oversee it? And yet it seems to have only a vague will of its own, tied in to the mandate of its abilities. Without a consciousness to direct it, nothing could actually be created or destroyed. It's as if the power of preservation understands that its tendency to reinforce stability is not enough. If nothing changed, nothing would ever come to exist. That makes me wonder who or what the minds of preservation and ruin were. Regardless, the Mists, the power of preservation, chose someone to become their host long before all of this happened. That someone, however, was immediately seized by Ruin and used as a pawn. He must have known that by giving her a disguised hemolytic spike, he would keep the Mists from investing themselves in her as they wished. The three times she drew upon their power, then, were the three times when her earring had been removed from her body. When she had fought the Lord Ruler, his allomancy had ripped it free. When fighting Marsh in Fadrix, she had used the earring as a weapon. And at the end, Marsh ripped it out, freeing her and allowing the Mists, which were now desperate for a host, since preservation's last wisp was gone, to finally pour themselves into her. 79. Something changed. Vin arose from her contemplation of the world. Something important was happening. She didn't have enough experience to tell what it was immediately, but she did see Ruin's nexus suddenly shoot away. She followed. Speed wasn't an issue. In fact, she didn't even fully feel like she was moving. She followed because that was how her mind interpreted the experience of instantly moving her consciousness to the place where Ruin had focused his. She recognized the area, the pits of Hath-Sin, or a place nearby. As a portion of her mind had noticed earlier, the pits themselves had become a massive refugee camp, the people there quickly consuming the resources that the Terrace people had carefully stored. A part of her smiled. The Terrace gave of their goods freely, helping those who had fled Luthadel. The Lord Ruler had worked to breed the Terrace people so they were docile. However, had he expected that in making his perfect servants he would also create a thoughtful, kindly people, who would give of their last flocks to help those who were starving? The thing that she'd noticed earlier didn't have to do with the Terrace or their guests. She saw it as she drew closer. A shining blaze of something. Powerful, more mighty than the sun itself to her eyes. She focused on it, but could see little. What could shine so magnificently?
"Take this," a voice said. "Find humans and trade for weapons and supplies."
"Yes, Lord Kampar," a second voice said.
They were coming from the center of the shining area. It was to the side of the pits, only a few minutes' travel from the refugees.
Oh, no, Vin thought, feeling a sudden dread.
"The foolish firsts have sat on this treasure for far too long," Kampar said. "With these riches we could be ruling, not serving mankind."
"I thought we didn't want to change things," the second voice said.
"Oh, we won't. Not quickly, at least. For now, just this small amount needs to be sold."
Hidden beneath the ground, Vin thought, heightened mind making the connections. In a place that already shines because of the large number of metal deposits. Ruin would never have been able to know where the ATM was. The depth of the Lord Ruler's strategies amazed her. He had held on for 1,000 years, maintaining such an amazing secret, keeping ATM safe. She imagined obligators communicating only on metal plates, giving instructions for the operations at the pits. She imagined caravans traveling from the pits, carrying ATM mixed with gold and coins to hide where it was moving and what exactly was going on. "You don't know what I do for mankind," the Lord Ruler had said.
And I didn't, Vin thought. Thank you.
She felt Ruin surge with power, and she blocked him. But just as she had been able to get a tendril of power past Ruin to Elend, Ruin was able to get the tiniest thread through. It was enough, for the one who had spoken was tainted with hemallergy. A spike in each shoulder drew Ruin's power and allowed him to speak to their bearer.
A Chandra? Vin thought, her senses finally managing to peer through the ATM glare to see a creature with a translucent body standing in a cavern just beneath the ground.
Another Chandra was crawling out of a hole nearby, carrying a small pouch of ATM. Ruin seized control of the Chandra Kanpar. The creature stiffened, his metal spikes betraying him.
"Speak of this," Ruin said to Kanpar,
Vin feeling his words as they pulsed into the Chandra.
"How much ATM is there?"
"What? Who are you?" Kanpar said. "Why are you in my head?"
"I am God," the voice said, "and you are mine. All of you are mine."
Elend landed outside the pits of Hath-Sin, throwing up a puff of ash. Oddly, some of his own soldiers were there, guarding the perimeter. They rushed forward, spears held anxiously, then froze when they recognized him.
"Lord Venture?"
one of the men asked with shock.
"I know you," Elend said, frowning. "From my army at Fadrix."
"You sent us back, my lord," the other soldier said, "with General Demu, to help Lord Penrod in Luthadel."
Elend glanced up at the night sky, speckled with stars. Some time had passed during his travel to the pits from Luthadel. If time were now passing normally, the night was halfway through. What would happen when the sun rose again?
"Quickly," Elend said. "I need to speak with the leaders of this camp."
The return of the first generation was accomplished with as much flair as Sazed had hoped. The old Chandra, now wearing larger bodies, still bore the distinctive colorings and aged skin of their generation. He had feared that the ordinary Chandra would not recognize them. However, he hadn't counted on the long lifespans of the Chandra people. Even if the firsts only emerged once every century, most of the Chandra would have seen them several times. Sazed smiled as the group of firsts moved into the main Chandra chamber, continuing to cause shock and surprise in the others. They proclaimed Kanpar had betrayed them and imprisoned them, then called the Chandra people to assemble. Sazed stayed back behind Milan and the others, watching for snags in their plan. To the side, he saw a familiar Chandra approaching.
"Keeper,"
Tensun said, still wearing the body of a fifth.
"We need to be careful. There are strange things afoot."
"Such as?"
Sazed asked. Then Tensun attacked him. Sazed started, and his moment of confusion cost him dearly. Tensun, or whoever it was, got his hands around Sazed's throat and began to choke him. They fell backward, drawing the attention of the surrounding Chandra. Sazed's assailant, bearing bones of rock, weighed far more than Sazed, and was easily able to roll to the top, his hands still on Sazed's neck.
"Tensun?"
Milan asked, sounding terrified.
"It's not him," Sazed thought. "It can't be."
"Keeper," his assailant said between clenched teeth, "something is very wrong."
"You're telling me?"
Sazed tried to gasp for breath, reaching toward the pocket of his robe, struggling to grab the metal-mined lock inside.
"I can barely keep myself from crushing your throat right now," the Chandra continued. "Something has control of me. It wants me to kill you."
"You're doing a pretty good job," Sazed thought.
"I'm sorry," Tensun said.
The firsts had gathered around them. Sazed was barely able to focus, panic controlling him as he fought a much stronger, much heavier foe. He grabbed hold of his impromptu steel mind, but only then realized that speed would do him little good when he was being held so tightly.
"It has come, then,"
whispered Haddock, leader of the firsts. Sazed barely noticed as one of the other firsts began to shake.
People were crying out, but the blood thumping in Sazed's ears kept him from hearing what they were saying. Haddock turned away from the gasping Sazed, and then, in a loud voice, yelled something.
"The resolution has come!"
Above him, Tensun jerked. Something within the Chandra seemed to be fighting. Tradition and a lifetime of training warred against the control of an outside force. Tensun released Sazed with one hand, but kept choking him with the other. Then, with his free hand, the Chandra reached toward his own shoulder. Sazed blacked out.